And we welcome you back to Chat with a Cat, and it's right here on KPAY Sports 1290. As every Thursday, we join you talking with an exciting Chico State personality, student athlete, or athlete from the past. And today, it is one of the more successful athletes that Chico State has ever had at the university. Two-time NCAA champion in golf at Chico State, where he attended school from 2000 to 2004. It's J.J. Jakovac, two-time winner of the Arnold Palmer Award, given to the best Division II player of the year. Jakovac, of course, the recipient of that award in 2004 as well, given annually to the most outstanding collegiate golfer in the nation, regardless of division. And right now, he is the caddy, the current caddy, for Colin Morikawa, the fifth-ranked golfer in the world. JJ, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me, Mike. Appreciate it. Good to be here.
Absolutely. You know, in following your career as a Chico State golfer, it was really incredible. And there were times when you were playing in a tournament, and I was kind of saying to my bosses here at the radio station, I said, I know we don't do play-by-play for golf, but it would really be a good idea if you sent me on the road and I could follow the Chico State golf team around so I could update everybody, because we were all following the live stats, the golf stat page, when those teams were making their exciting runs, and especially you were playing so well. You must have fond memories of Chico State.
Definitely. It was, you're right. I mean, that kind of, you know, brought back some memories of, you know, we weren't really, when I came there, Chico State was definitely no golf powerhouse. I mean, it was, I came there because Denny Varley, the old coach, was the only coach who really lifted me out of high school, even though I had a really good resume in high school. I just never was on the national stage. So, coming up to Chico, we didn't really have a, I'd say well-known golf team, but then it just, yeah, it came together quick. We had a couple JC transfers that were really good. And then all of a sudden, my sophomore year, you know, as you mentioned, we were always kind of ranked in the top five in the country, competing to win national championships. We never did as a team, but we were really close a couple times. We won a lot of tournaments also.
Yes, and very competitive in those tournaments. And I know that there was really a time where you guys really turned the corner as a team. I'm going to get into your Chico State stuff later on in the interview, but I want to let everybody know what you're doing right now, because you know, the transformation from player to caddy, and it doesn't mean you stop playing. It just means maybe you're not playing at that high a level, but you're involved intricately in the game. You are now a caddy for one of the best players in the world, the winner of the 2020 PGA Championship, Colin Morikawa. I'm going to ask you chronologically, I mean, how did this come about? You've caddied for several golfers before, but there has been a fit here with Colin. How did the transformation go from player to say, you know, I'm going to try this caddying thing out?
Yeah, so I've actually been a caddy on the PGA Tour for 12 years now. Not just on the PGA Tour, a little bit on the Korn Ferry, but once was a nationwide tour. I played after college. Obviously, I turned pro and played for a few years. You know, I did okay. I was kind of treading water. I was making some money, but spending a lot of money traveling all over the country, playing different mini tours and things like that. And never made it through the PGA Tour's qualifying school the first two or three tries. And kind of got burnt out on it for a minute. And I was like, you know, I'm going to take a break for a little bit. Didn't really know what I was going to do. And then a friend who I played amateur golf with, Matt Betancourt, was playing on the Nationwide Tour at the time. Couldn't find a good caddy. He was like, hey, since you're taking a break, will you come caddy for me? And then I did, and he took off and won a bunch of tournaments, won the money list out there, got to the PGA Tour, and I kind of just kept doing it. And I never really intended to completely not stop playing golf professionally, but it's kind of how it worked out. Like, I worked for him, And then we split up, and I started working for another guy who I played amateur golf with, Peter Tomasulo, who was on the PGA Tour at the time. Peter Tomasulo kept getting hurt, couldn't stay healthy. And then finally in 2012, early in January, I got a call from Ryan Moore, who was one of the best players in the world at the time. And I worked for him for 8 years on the PGA Tour, starting in 2012 to 2019. So after we split up, I was the first time in a long time I'd kind of been what you call a free agent, but I had a good name out there as far as turning that, you know, caddying into a career. And that's kind of all you can do is work for good players to build your reputation as a caddy. Plus Callum, who's Tiger Woods' old caddy, has worked for Jim Furyk for 20 years. First time I met him, I asked him, how do I become a good caddy? And he looked at me and said, you want to be a good caddy? Get the best bleeping player. And that's one thing I've learned in caddying. It can be more true. I mean, you could be a great caddy if you don't have the player. It doesn't really matter. So anyway, Ryan and I split up and was kind of staying at home with my new son. And then I talked to an agent friend of mine who I'd made over the years. And he's like, what are you going to do now? And I said, I don't really know. I'm just kind of waiting for the upright opportunity. He's like, well, don't wait. Like, try to go get one. And so I got Colin's agent's email. Sent him an email with my resume saying I'm interested in helping him out because he was a stud in college and he was going to get some sponsors exemptions on the PGA Tour and over the summer. So I told him I was interested in helping him if he needed it. And basically one thing led to another. And later that same day, I was on the phone with Colin, who was interviewing me. So, we started at the U.S. Open qualifier in June of 2019, made it through the U.S. Open qualifier. And then it was kind of like he just took off from there. He had a few sponsors exemptions lined up. Canadian Open was his first PGA Tour start. He finished 13th. Then he went to the U.S. Open and didn't play great, but finished 35th, shooting 6-under on the back nine on Sunday at Pebble. And then after that, he just kind of took off. And in the next three events, he has card locked up. He finished top 10 twice, and it was pretty cool.
That's fantastic. And, you know, I've always wondered about the relationship between player and caddy because I would imagine if you're a caddy, you can't be too hard-headed. You're kind of there. Is it true that you're just kind of there? The player bounces stuff off of you. You know their game pretty much. I mean, you're there for practice rounds. You're there for all of it. But they might have a couple of ideas on something, two or three ideas, and you're there to kind of – maybe direct them in an area where you think they might be best. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. That's part of what you do. I mean, you also well the one thing though you also have to remember is even the best golfers in the world get pissed, get emotional, whatever. So you also have to kick them in the butt sometimes. Like, you know, you gotta know when to do it, but mm-hmm. sometimes you gotta just be like, hey, snap out of it, let's go. We got four holes left, let's birdie two of them, let's finish strong and, you know, get some momentum back or whatever. When things aren't going good, I'm just saying it's the best players in the world are not immune to feeling overwhelmed and feeling crappy because they're not playing well and being emotional and things like that. So, I mean, there's all kinds of things you do, you know.
So you're
a comedian, you're a sports psychologist,
yeah.
You're a bag carrier, you're a numbers guy, you do lots of different things.
I was about to say, you're a barber, bartender, / psychologist for these
exactly,
guys.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, you do a little of everything. It just depends on what they need at the time, you know?
Yeah, and I would imagine your resume as a player helps you in terms of what they may need. And of course you talked about the numbers. That's really interesting because I would say, you know, you're sitting there and you may be looking at a shot and he might turn to you and say, what do you think? And you got to know yardage, you got to know club, you got to know how he hits the ball, you got to know where he's going to be on the green. I mean, there are so many variables. And as a professional athlete, these guys who are hitting the ball, they don't want to have any doubt. And so they're going to turn to you, and you got to come up with that answer. I would imagine that there's pressure in that too.
Yeah, I mean, what you said right there is couldn't be more true. Especially in, I don't know about other professional sports. I'm sure it's the same, but professional golf, if you have any doubt over what you're doing when you're over the shot, I mean, you are not going to execute it like you want to, like the best players in the world can. So that's basically what we do. I mean, we just get to a spot over every shot. We talk about variables, whether it be wind or humidity or temperature or the lie, and if it's going to jump, if it's not going to jump. All those things go into before he steps into the shot, so that when he steps into the shot, he can be fully committed to, you know. And that's even like, I'll see sometimes where we'll talk about the shot, and I'll tell him what I think, and you can kind of see it on his face. He's stepping into it, and he's like, maybe you can see he's not fully committed. So I'll even say sometimes, hey, Paul, step back. Are you good? You have everything you need? You know, are you committed? And he might say, yeah, I got it. Or he might be like, well, I feel the wind in, and we're talking and stuff to right. Is it? I'm like, yeah, trust it. It's up there. You know, you just kind of see those little things where if he's not fully committed, you got to catch him and make him fully committed, because bad things happen if you're not fully committed.
That's right.
Jordan Spieth said on his interview, he didn't play well on Sunday at this Phoenix Open. It just happened. But he said in his interview, I'm committed to being committed, which I thought was really a really good quote, because he's been struggling big time, but it's mainly in his head, you know? So
how much is this game, how mentally tough? And I, coming off the Tiger Woods documentary, I'm always thinking mental, but I mean, golfers have got to be, they are some of the most mentally tough athletes that are out there, because you cannot let a bad shot bother you. The champions don't. I mean, they're going to get you can maybe have those 2 or 3 seconds of being PO'd, but you cannot let it affect the rest of your game and let it lead you into a tailspin. Mentally, this game can drive you nuts, and you've got to also be able to handle that of the golfers you're caddying for.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you an example. What I've seen from Colin in his young career, it's obviously just starting, but I'll give you an example. The Workday tournament over last summer was a tournament that was filling in for another tournament that got canceled because of COVID. So they moved it to Muirfield Village, which is where the Memorial Tournament is in Ohio, Jack Nicklaus's tournament. So they had the Workday tournament there the week before, and Colin won that tournament. But we were playing on Sunday with Justin Thomas. He was then the number one ranked player in the world, or might have been number two. But he makes so we are one back going into this par 5, 15. And we hit a decent drive, and he hits a good drive. He hits a really good second 3-wood under the green, like 35 feet, Justin Thomas does. We hit it in the bunker. Colin hits a decent bunker shot. JT makes a 40-footer for eagle to go to 18 under, and we miss our birdie putt. So now we're 3 back with 3 to go. And to be fair, you know, obviously there's lots of different things you can finish. You don't have to win every tournament. There's lots of money to be had. There's all this stuff going on. So in my head, I'm thinking, all right, how do we need to play the last 3 holes to keep our second place spot and not drop to 3rd or whatever? Mm-hmm. And I'm not, obviously Colin's not thinking that way, but I'm being realistic. We're 3 back to Justin Thomas with 3 to go on a tough golf course. We end up tying him and beating him in a 3-hole playoff where, I don't know if you remember, but Justin Thomas made that 70-footer, and
yes,
then Colin made a 25-footer after him to extend the playoff.
Yes.
So it was, you talk about being mentally tough, like, it'd be really easy to get deflated when you're feeling like you're going to win the tournament the whole day, and then he makes that bomb for eagle, and you go 3 back or 3 to go, and you go, well, okay, well, maybe next time. But he didn't do that. He stayed the course and played every shot till it was at his best, till it was over.
When did you know in the 2020 PGA Championship that Colin was having a special weekend?
Honestly, I did obviously a lot of interviews after that tournament, but I never had that question, and I didn't really think it was. You know, when you're in the moment, you don't really like. I mean, he did finish. He chipped in on 14 and then eagled 16. So, I mean, I knew we were having a chance to win. It was just hard to, like, think like that when you're – I know he had the lowest score to par in a major in the weekend and all that stuff, but you don't think that way when you're going to the back nine, you see the leaderboard, and there's just 7-way tie for first. Mm-hmm. You're not thinking that. So I didn't really think about any of that till it was over. I did, however, think, wow, he's going to win the PGA Championship after he made – everyone thinks it's after he hit the drive on 16. I knew he had to make that putt. I mean, it was like, I know it was close, but it was still 7-footer, and it was just outside left edge probably. It's a big, 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 big putt to make, because in a major, as you know, a 1-shot lead and a 2-shot lead, it seems like it's just 1 shot, but it feels way bigger than 1 shot, you know? You can play conservatively on the last 2 holes, and you're definitely going to win if you make 1 bogey kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. It was a special, and it was, what was interesting about the weekend is they kept bringing up He could be the third youngest to win a major. He could be the third youngest. And a lot of big names on that leaderboard. And all of a sudden, he is the biggest of the names when the day is done. And that had to be so incredibly exciting and gratifying for the time that you guys put in.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he put in that much time. He was still really, really young, and he did work really hard, and it was actually, I was just surprised that it happened so fast. I wasn't surprised that he won majors. I knew he would. It's just, he turned pro, and he was in college in the spring of 2019. He won a major on the PGA, in 2020. So just a testament to him and him knowing how he belongs out there, and he wants to, be great in this game.
We're speaking with J.J. Jakovac, former Chico State Wildcat. He was a golfer at Chico State from 2000 to 2004, two-time NCAA champion, and, of course, winning the individual medalist honors at the national championships in 2002 and in 2004, and a two-time winner of the Arnold Palmer Award given to the Division II Player of the Year, also the recipient of the Jack Nicklaus Award, given annually to the most outstanding collegiate golfer in the nation, regardless of division. Right now, the caddy for the fifth-ranked golfer in the world, Colin Morikawa. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with JJ. We'll talk about his time at Chico State. And boy, was it a successful one. We'll talk about how he got here, what he found when he got here, and how it helped him in this next phase of life and the fun he had. College life is college life, and it is fun, and especially when you're winning golf tournaments. We take a quick break. We're back right after this.
Carl's Jr. invites you to try the new Fiery Famous Star. Are you looking for sizzling charbroiled burger bliss, melty pepper jack cheese, and kickin' jalapeno crispiness, all dripping with creamy, zesty, fiery sauce goodness? Your answer is yes. Join us for the new Fiery Famous Star. Only at Carl's Jr. Feed your happy. Available for a limited time at participating Carl's Jr. restaurants. Price participation may vary.
You're listening to Chat with a Cat. It's right here on KPAY Sports 1290, and we are speaking with one of the greats in the athletic field in Chico State history, two-time NCAA champion golfer, J.J. Jakovac, the current caddy for Colin Morikawa. We've been talking about his time as a caddy, but J.J., a heck of a player, heck of a player. Individual medalist honors and national champion in 2002 and 2004. We talked about his Arnold Palmer Award given to the best Division II player of the year. He won that twice. The Jack Nicklaus Award given to the best golfer in the nation, regardless of division, in 2004. Your time at Chico State, and you had mentioned earlier that Denny Varley, the legend here locally, was one of the only ones that was really looking into you to be a collegiate golfer. Give us the story about how you got here and what it felt like when you finally were here, and how your game developed. I mean, how your game just became what it was.
Yeah, well, I didn't play golf really until my sophomore year in high school. So that's part of the reason why, I wasn't on the national recruitment scale or anything like that. So I tried out for the team. Actually, my freshman summer, my sophomore year, I tried out for the team, and I got cut. I was shooting for 9 holes. I was shooting 45, and we had a pretty good golf team. So I got way better really fast, and the next season I won the league, the MEL for Vintage High School, and actually set the record for the most points earned in a season in matches. So I was actually on a trajectory of getting better really fast. So, but by that time, your kids were already committed to going to colleges and things like that. And I'm just getting started to play tournament golf kind of thing. So, I had won a lot of junior tournaments, local junior tournaments by the time I was a senior. And I think that's probably how Denny, recruited me and heard of me, but that's probably the same reason why I wasn't on a national recruitment trail kind of thing. So by the time I got to Chico, I was, like I said, I'd been only playing tournament golf for a few years, but I was continuing to get better at everything, and it was happening pretty fast. So honestly, I don't remember exactly what my stats were my freshman year at Chico, But I know I became the number one player on the team pretty fast, and I just continued to get better. And I think everyone on the team, I mean, there was a bunch of older guys on the team that I got along with great, and they liked having, you know, a young guy play well. And I think it made them all want to play a little better. So that was basically how I got there and how that all happened.
Okay. You're golfing, you're shooting in high school a 45 through 9. And then the next year, you were winning the set. Okay, talk to me about that time from when you're shooting a 45 through 9 to the point where you are the best golfer in the area. What did you do? Yeah. Did you get lessons from a certain coach? Did you live at the range? What did you do?
Yeah. So both. I mean, both. My dad was my coach. My dad was a really good golfer, really good player. He was a professional, like a teaching pro back in the 70s and 80s. Got out of the golf business completely around when I was born. But there's a video of me hitting balls when I was like 3 or 4 years old, like the Tiger videos, like really good golf swing, flushing it kind of thing. But I never really got into golf. I got into other sports. And my dad wasn't going to force me into it. So once I told him in high school, my freshman summer, like, hey, I want to play golf. He's like, all right, let's play golf. And so that's kind of when he started teaching me. And that's one of the things that he jokes about still when I see him is the coach at my high school that cut me. He's like, he got super mad at him. He's like, you got to be kidding me. He's like, because even though I was shooting 44, 45 for 9 holes, you could still see that I was like, okay, I hit the ball. I hit it far. I hit it pretty straight. But as you know, golf, you need to learn how to score. Sometimes it's duffing a chip or hitting one ball out of bounds and then hitting the next one out of bounds. Like, learning how to score is a whole different thing. Learning how to play the game. And I didn't know how to play the game at all. I just knew how to hit the ball. So that's probably, to answer your question, the biggest thing that happened. Yes, I did live at the range, but it wasn't as much a physical transformation going from shooting, you know, 9 over for 9 holes average to being able to shoot 3 or 4 under for 9 holes. It was mostly a transformation of learning how to play golf. And that's still something to this day that helps me, you know, as a caddy is just knowing how to play the game properly. And that's a big underrated part of golf. Like you see, there's tons of guys on the PGA Tour that when they hit it, you're like, man, he's been playing out here for 15 years. He should have won 15 times and he's won twice. Well, it's because he doesn't know how to get the ball in the hole as good as other guys do. But yeah, that's basically when I first started playing, that's the biggest change was. So yeah, getting lessons from dad, and I worked at the golf course at Kennedy Park in Napa that summer. So I was there every day from, you know, dawn to dusk kind of thing, working and then playing and practicing.
The game of golf, there is such a feel to the great players. They can, you know, it's not everyone loves hit, you know, off the tee you're hitting these bombs and it's great, but everybody knows that the best players, they're, you know, 170 yards out, putting it within on a place on the green where you can get it in the hole and give yourself a good score and give yourself a chance. It's that game that wins you tournaments. And I would imagine the feel comes from just playing and playing and being at the range and kind of visualizing, I'm 150 yards out, I'm 170 yards out, and I need to put it right there.
Yeah. Yeah, and you have to understand, yeah, when you get to a certain level in golf, you have to also have to really understand lies, like reading lies, and because judging how far your ball is going to go is obviously a massive part of shooting a good score. If you're in the rough for 2 holes in a row and you judge a lie wrong and you get a flyer and you hit it over a green where it's dead and you make double bogey, it's like, you know, that might not be that big of a deal for a 20 handicap, but for a guy who's shooting in the high 60s, it's a big deal. So sometimes knowing when not to try for, you know, the hero shot is huge. Like sometimes you're like, okay, I got this jumper lie. You're in the Bermuda playing in Florida. The pin's in the back. The greens are firm, you know. I could probably hit this 8-iron and hit it back to the pin and make birdie, but if it jumps, I'm going over the green into the water and I'm dead. So I'm going to hit 9-iron or wedge and play it to the front edge and just have the 50-footer for par and go to the next hole. Golf tournaments are marathons. They're not sprints, you know. You you have a long time to make up. So one hole making a par when you're out of position is good. It's a good thing, not going for – and that's one thing that young players need to learn. Sometimes these guys are so good now. I see it all the time out there. They're so good now. They're so caught up in making birdie on every hole instead of thinking about should they try to make – you know what I'm saying? When you're out of position, sometimes pars are good scores, even on golf courses where 20 unders winning the tournament. They still can come up and bite you, and knowing when to go for the hero shot or when to go for the tough shot and when not to is a big part of it, for sure.
How often do you get to play golf? I mean, when you're with Colin and you're at a new course and you're navigating it, I mean, are you there, he's playing it, you're taking notes? Are you you're carrying the bag and you've got a notepad and you're taking notes on each hole, like, okay, we don't want to hit it here. We do.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So we have really good yardage books now, as you can imagine, that when I started caddying, they were not very good. They were kind of hand drawn, photocopied. You know, a guy had a business, he was a caddy, and he would make yardage books, so he'd go all the sprinkler heads, and we work on the PGA Tour, we work off the front edge of the greens, instead of most people when they play golf, they have 125 to the middle or whatever. We work off pretty exact measurements to the front edge, and then we know how deep the pin is on each green, which is how we're trying to figure out where we want to land it to roll out to the distance that we want. But yeah, when we play, I mean, I've been doing it long enough now, there's not really any new courses for me. They're all new courses to him, but I've caddied them all many times, so I have my yardage books from the past with all my notes. Exactly, certain holes, you know, you don't want to hit it left here, you don't want to, obviously that's not how I'm communicating that to him, hey, don't hit it left here, but I know where not to go, and, you know, and he does a really good job of, during practice rounds, of he'll stand on the green, and he'll kind of draw the slopes in his green, and see where it would be nice to miss, where it's not nice to miss, things like that, but yeah, you just learn it. I do not play the golf courses, no, I'm not allowed to do that. I do go on the golf courses, typically probably 3 to 4 hours before I start working with him on it, just by myself with other caddies, walking it just to see if anything's changed on it, to check out how the markings are all marked and if everything's kind of copacetic to get the week going.
Is it a good little fraternity of you? You guys probably all get along. You're kind of all in the same boat. You're all pulling for the guy that you're caddying for, but you've got one of the more unique jobs in the industry and in professional sport. I would imagine there's quite a fraternity.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, a lot of good guys and a lot of ex-players out there now. Multiple guys that I played amateur golf with are caddies now, you know, like just for example, Andy Sanders was an All-American, two-time first-team All-American at the University of Houston. He's a caddy on the tour. There's lots of guys that I played college golf against and with in amateur golf that are out there now, just because it's so different. Like, you know, you can make a really, really good living caddying now, which it didn't used to be that way. Back in the day, it used to be, you know, three caddies to a room, staying in a Motel 6, driving from tournament to tournament. But it's just changed so much in the last 20, 25 years. So there's a lot more, you know, college-educated, successful people who just decided instead of going in the business world, they wanted to do this.
And boy, what a career it is! I mean, you must be having a blast, especially when you're caddying for a player like Colin.
Yeah, it's fun. It's definitely a fun job. I mean, it's, you know, it's a lot of travel, but that's the other good thing is you only, when you're off, you're off. So you only, you know, work 24 to 25 tournaments a year, and then I'm off the other ones, but it is a lot of travel.
And so you're living in Vegas, so I imagine you're golfing a lot when you got these time off.
Yeah, you'd be imagining incorrectly.
Oh, really?
I don't play golf really anymore at all. I have two young boys.
Yes.
So that's when I'm gone. Can you imagine if I showed up on Tuesday or on Monday, and then on Wednesday I was like, okay, babe, I'm going golfing for 5 hours. It would not go over very well.
That's not going to happen.
I play once in a while on the road, once in a while. And then, you know, when my boys get older, I'm looking forward to, you know, when they want to go out to the golf course and stuff like that. But right now, golf's definitely, I mean, to give you an example, I've probably played 18 hole rounds. I've probably played maybe twice in the last 3 months.
Wow.
So
I would not, I would not have thought about that. We're going to take our final break, and I had a few. I have a few other questions. There's some great little cheat sheet that my executive producer Luke Reed with Chico State Sports Information got me regarding you. Some of your likes, some of your favorite places to play, places to caddy. I want you to talk about those. And I had a few more questions for JJ. We're talking with JJ Jakovac, one of the greats in Chico State history, two-time national champion and current caddy for fifth-ranked player in the world, Colin Morikawa. Chat with a Cat continues right here on KPAY Sports 1290.
Carl's Jr. invites you to try the new Fiery Famous Star. Are you looking for sizzling charbroiled burger bliss, melty pepper jack cheese, and kickin' jalapeno crispiness, all dripping with creamy, zesty, fiery sauce goodness? Your answer is yes. Join us for the new Fiery Famous Star. Only at Carl's Jr. Feed your happy. Available for a limited time at participating Carl's Jr. restaurants. Price participation may vary.
Just finishing up our interview with JJ Jakovac, of course, two-time national champion at Chico State in golf and two-time winner of the Arnold Palmer Award given to the best Division II player of the year. Current caddy for fifth-ranked player in the world, Colin Morikawa. Before we let you go, JJ, I want to ask you, you mentioned earlier in the interview that you were playing and you were, you know, making a decent living playing, but you got burned out. And it leads me to a story of a good friend of mine, former golfer at Chico State in the early 90s. And he said, you have really no idea how hard it is to be good. And for those of you folks that think, he goes, if you think you're playing golf and you love it, and you do, you start out and you love the game. But once it gets to the point where you're having to practice because you have to, and you don't want to go to the range and you don't want to practice, you know it's time to step away. And he goes, I was completely and totally burned out. I could not play anymore. Did you get to that point when you say you were burned out? You were grinding and the grind wasn't fun anymore?
Yeah, kind of did. And that's the thing. I think that's a good point. What you say there is, there's some people who, like, love that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So there's some people like your friend, and I got burnt out. I initially just wanted to take a little break from it. I didn't really want to just stop completely, but that's just how it turned out. But, yeah, there's some people who, even some of the best players in the world, where you just, like, see them, and they get done playing, they play a bad round or whatever, and you go out there, go on the range for 2 hours, and they just grind, and you're like, you know, that can't be fun.
Mm-mm.
So what makes him do it? And it's just that drive. Like he wants to be great. He wants to be the best player out here. He wants to do that. Now, Colin, that's a bad example for Colin, because he'll go out there and he'll play a bad round and he'll be like, I'm like, you want to hit any balls? Nope. See you tomorrow. He just can wash it away. And he's like, I know I'm good. I know I'm ready. I know I'm fine. I'm going to go play great tomorrow and wipe off the board. Some guys are different. Some guys will go sit on the range for 2 hours and just grind and grind and grind it out. And I think that's a good point, is you have to love the grind to be great, but you also have to grind on the correct things. So I've seen it many times where some guys on tour, like, you know, they'll go out and play around and they'll go shoot 74 and play bad, and you'll like have played with them, and they're maybe a second or third year guy who's struggling to keep their card. And I've seen a lot of rounds of golf, and I'll watch him, like, man, his short game was just not good. I mean, every time he missed a green, it was just like an easy chip, and he'd chip it to 7 feet, miss the putt, and make a bogey where it was just not a bogey. And then he'd get done, and he'd go on the range and hit 7 irons for an hour and a half. And you're like, what? He hit it fine. Why is he? But so, you know, it's the recognition of knowing what to grind on and practicing the correct things, because, you know, like I said, you can go hit your 7 iron as straight as you want on the driving range for an hour and a half, but it's not going to make you shoot good scores. What's going to make you shoot good scores is getting really good at that up and down when you're 1 foot in the bunker, 1 foot out of it, out of a dirt lie, bumping it up a hill. You know, things like that are going to make you shoot good scores. So,
man, wisdom of JJ. This is great stuff for this hacker. I'm going to take some of this advice. You talked about, you'd mentioned to Luke Reed, I call him my executive producer, your favorite course to caddy Augusta and your favorite course to play Winged Foot. Explain both. Augusta is kind of self-explanatory, but.
Yeah, that Winged Foot. Okay, so I'll give you the Augusta one first. Augusta is just incredible. If you've never been there and you have an opportunity to go during the Masters, I would say definitely go. And it's kind of cool. They're going to have some fans this year, so I'm excited for that, because let me tell you, in November, with the grass being different
because it's that time of year. The overseed's not in very good yet, mm-hmm. and so it's not in very good shape. And then no fans. That was one of the weirdest things I've ever. A regular PGA Tour event's one thing with no fans. I mean, it still sucks, mm-hmm. but the Masters with no fans was eerie. It really was. Just being there so many times and hearing the roars and the energy and stuff like that. So, going around that place is self-explanatory. It's incredible. There's some other good ones too, obviously, like Pebble Beach growing up in Northern California, caddying the U.S. Open there was pretty cool. Playing Wingfoot, I said that, and I probably should walk it back. That's a really hard question, I think. Mm-hmm. I played the USAM at Wingfoot in 2004, I believe, and then caddied the U.S. Open just recently when Bryson won. And I don't think I'd want to play it, actually, anymore, just because I'm not that good anymore, and that course is brutally hard. I didn't remember the course very well. I remember the layout of the course. It's incredible. It's a Tillinghast, which is one of my favorite architects. Tillinghast course. I remember the layout, but I didn't remember the green complexes, and the green complexes are so extreme out there. I mean, it's just shocking if you get on the wrong side of the hole how difficult the two-putt is. But there's some other places that I really want to play. Like, there's a place in the – it's an Alistair McKenzie course in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan called Crystal Downs. And the people that I've talked to that have been there say that's the best golf course in the world. So That's kind of on my bucket list of places I want to go someday. It's just so out of the way. It's going to be tough. Although, the Ryder Cup this year, if we make that, is I think that's at Whistling Straits. So that's not too far away from there. So maybe it'll happen this year if we make that Ryder Cup team. Who knows?
Yeah, road trip. Yeah. Before I let you go, in the little bio that you shared with Luke – and I want to know if this is still true. He asked you, what was the greatest golf shot you've personally witnessed on tour? And you said Rory McIlroy, 16, final round of the Tour Championship, three back, hold it from 160 yards out, gets in a playoff with Colin, and ends up...
No, with Ryan.
It was with Ryan at the time.
This was 2016, yep.
Yeah, with Ryan, and ends up winning the whole thing. To this day, is that still the best shot you've seen?
Man, that was a great shot, but you have to put in Colin's drive on 16. One of the greatest shots in history. I mean, to win a major, like, it really is. I'll give you a co lead. I mean, that shot Rory made, he was in the Tour Championship. Like I said, he was three back. He was an afterthought at that point. It was between Ryan and Kevin Chappell. And we're standing in the fairway, and he hits this shot he probably hit a 9-iron from 165 uphill. It's going around, I'm like, it's in the air, and I'm like, well, that looks really, really good. And it lands, and then the crowd goes wild. I'm like, I didn't know if it went in, and then it kept going wild. So I was like, "Wow, it went in the hole, didn't it?" And then the way he finished, so that was an incredible shot to be a part of. And then we had a great playoff with him. I mean, we battled. We had a four-hole playoff. It was pretty intense. But Colin's drive at the PGA. I mean, you're tied for the lead. We went one ahead on 14 with the chip in, and then Paul Casey birdied 16 ahead of us to tie us for the lead. So you're tied for the lead in a major with three holes to go, and you hit a driver to 7 feet on the hole, you know, where if it gets one bounce to the right, it's in the bunker, and it's going to be a tough, tough up and down. So, I mean, under the circumstances,
best shot.
Let me tell you, when you're caddying on tour for as long as I have, you see a lot of really, really good golf shots. What makes it great, I think, is the circumstances. So that's probably my answer. The number one is that because I was there when he won a major with that drive. So
is there just a time when he has a shot like that? I mean, I'm an emotional guy calling a basketball game. I can't even stay in my dang chair. But is there a time as a caddy that you just want to, like, I mean, the player Colin is a very calm, composed, but is there a time you just want to just let out a scream, just yell, but you can't? But I bet inside you're just like, yeah, you nailed it. You know?
No, that putt he made on for Eagle on 16 at the PGA after that drive, I gave it a huge fist pump. I didn't scream, but yeah, you're inside. You know how important that stuff is. Like, definitely,
awesome.
Definitely. Like,
JJ, I have enjoyed this immensely. What a fun guy to talk to, and we have, you know. You got to hand it to Luke and Rory at Chico State Sports Information. They keep us in the loop. We never lose track of some of the greats in Chico State history. We were speaking with Aaliyah Gray a few days ago, one of the great distance runners in Chico State history, and preparing for the 2021 Olympics. You have really made a name for yourself, not only at Chico State, but here afterward. And we are just thrilled to see all the success you're experiencing. And thank you for sharing some of the stories and what you're up to these days. And congratulations and continued success.
Yeah, Mike, no worries. And I want to say to the Fox family, a good friend of the program, Jack Fox, passed away recently. And I just want to say, our thoughts and prayers are with his family and Nancy, and hope everybody gets through this okay.
Well said, JJ. Thank you very much. You have a great day, and thanks for joining us today.
Okay, Mike. Thank you.
JJ Jakovac joining us here on Chat with a Cat. And it's every Thursday, and you can, of course, if you missed any part of this interview, you can go to ChicoWildcats.com or KPAYSports.com under the podcast section and listen to this interview. I'm Mike Baca for KPAY Sports 1290.